This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
We are not here to lecture. We are not here to tell other people how to live, what to do, who to be, or how to worship.
Donald Trump makes his first trip abroad, calling on Middle Eastern nations to drive out extremists. We get reactions from his supporters back home.
And he delivered a very succinct and right tone and right message to the Muslim nations.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio speaks on Russia's close ties with the Trump administration.
By interfering with the FBI, yes, that would be problematic. It would be not just problematic, it would be, you know, obviously a potential obstruction of justice that people have to make a decision on, any president. That said, we don't know if that's what's happened here.
We get expert analysis on the big wins and losses for the insurance industry following the legislative session.
The House and Senate really put a lot of energy into those issues, but it really just wasn't enough to garner approval to get it passed.
Plus, after a bitter divide, a tale of two Trump supporters still unable to mend fences despite their unwavering adulation for the president.
It would be nice for the governor to be the adult in a room to say, I apologize for putting you and your family through such turmoil for no reason, and I should not have. And I would accept his apology if he were to ever do that.
That's Rick Scott's former Lieutenant Governor, Jennifer Carroll. All that and more coming up on episode 107 of The Rotunda. President Donald Trump briefly joining in a traditional male-only sword dance before a state dinner in his honor in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Here are some excerpts from his highly anticipated speech to a room full of more than 50 predominantly Muslim countries. He used a tone that was a far cry from his extreme criticism of Islam.
Numerous Arab and Islamic scholars have eloquently argued that protecting equality strengthens Arab and Muslim communities. For many centuries, the Middle East has been home to Christians, Muslims, and Jews living side by side. We must practice tolerance and respect for each other once again, and make this region a place where every man and woman, no matter their faith or ethnicity, can enjoy a life of dignity and hope.
Now let's get some analysis from Florida's former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, a Trump supporter who rallied voters during his campaign stops in Jacksonville.
I keep hearing from the pundits that Mr. Trump has no blacks and women supporting him. Well, the last time I checked, I was black. And I'm still a woman, and I support Donald Trump for president.
President Trump, he made his first official abroad trip to Saudi Arabia, and he made his big speech to a room full of Muslims. And what do you think of that? Did you get a chance to hear his speech?
I did. He delivered I'm glad he stuck to the script, and he delivered a very succinct and right tone and right message to the Muslim nations. And what he injected to them, and which is a little different than we've seen from previous leaders in addressing Muslim nations or Muslim leaders, in that the president clearly told them, I'm not here to dictate to you what you do, what you believe, or how you act.
We are not here to lecture. We are not here to tell other people how to live, what to do, who to be, or how to worship. Instead, we are here to offer partnership based on shared interests and values.
What I would like for you to do, and that's how he came across, what I'd like for you to do is to join in partnership with us, form your coalition of nations to stamp out Muslim extremism. And therefore, it's up to you guys. If you want to stamp terrorists out, then you need to band together. Form your coalition. We will be with you, but don't expect us to step in to do the work that you're supposed to do.
A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth.
And I think that the message was received well to them, and they were probably looking to see, you know, what faux pas comes about from the speech. But I think they appreciated the president acknowledging their role in it and acknowledging their leadership in it, and also submitting his support to helping out in that coalition as well.
You mentioned faux pas, and it's like, you know, going in, there was a lot of anticipation into this speech, given how he has been on the campaign trail and the heavy, very critical rhetoric towards Islam.
I think Islam hates us. There's something there that there's a tremendous hatred there. There's a tremendous hatred. We have to get to the bottom of it.
The way he used to criticize President Obama for not using certain terms, and he also didn't use a few terms. So overall, you sense that he did a good job here. How does this move us forward?
I think he did a very good job in moving us forward. Number one, when he, in his first act on his trip, he committed to the Saudis to sell them arms, which shows a commitment to helping them to help themselves. He didn't commit to any troops going in anywhere. His message continued to resonate that they have to be the ones to step forward. So the ball is in their court to do something about this, for them to come up with a strategic plan to work together with the help of the United States. And I believe that his wording in, because when you travel overseas and people who have not dealt with other countries and doing business, any simple word, even an advertisement, you can say the wrong word translated into their language that will make a complete upset to the efforts that you're trying to bring forward. So every word of his, whoever wrote his speech, did a fantastic job in making sure each word could not be misinterpreted to mean something else, because he could have easily angered our partners in the region, but that did not come about because everything, he stuck to the script, he said the right things, and he set the right tone.
There were reports of some pushback to what Trump had to say. The Emirati foreign minister reportedly said during an interview that you can't point the blame just on the Middle East and that there are extremists in Europe as well. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who is a prominent member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, lifted his noticeable silence on the investigation into Russian meddling in the presidential campaign. He made the rounds on the Sunday talk shows, including CNN's State of the Union.
That's always been the White House's position, that this whole thing is a farce. That's their position. Our job in the Intelligence Committee has been to look at this entire episode for the purposes of counterintelligence in particular, and then arrive at the facts, put them out in a report, and move on from there. And that's what we're endeavoring to do in a bipartisan way. And again, the best way to do that is not to litigate it in the press, but to do our work and put the report in a way that is credible, so no one can deny its credibility and no one can say that we went into it already having made up our mind.
Not to litigate in the press. There are many who are wary of certain aspects in the role of the press. For a Trump supporter and for Donald Trump himself, the press is seen as the enemy, at least publicly. We get a sense from Trump supporters that despite all the smoke, there is no fire, and it could all very well be a witch hunt when it comes to the Russian investigation.
Well, a couple of things. The general public seldom get the truth, whether it's from their government or, and right now it seems as if it's from the press, because the press, at least the national press, seems to have an agenda to take Donald Trump out for whatever the reason.
Let's turn to former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, who is pointing Trump's domestic troubles on the press and a leaky White House.
Nowadays, with social media and everyone wanting to be praised and people want to have their moment in the sunshine, to be the moment in light, They're running to the media with sensitive information that they should not be, because they have signed a document saying they know how to handle classified information, they know the detriment of it, and they agree to abiding by the rules and regulations. So those people ought to be called to task, and this should not be a norm for our country. You're not seeing this thing happen in any other country. I don't care if they're third world countries or not, but why are we allowing it to happen in America? The president needs to do his job, and his people need to do their job without the fear that some information is going to be leaked, because we don't know. We're not in the meeting. We don't know the context of how something is presented.
Back in 2013, Carroll abruptly resigned as Florida's second-in-command after facing pressure following the result of a criminal investigation into an internet sweepstakes company where she once served as a consultant. Her tenure was marred by scandal, and you can hear how it all went down in her own words on episode 19 of The Rotunda.
So therefore, they're not the ones, and the press is not the one either, to say to the intelligence community and or the president, who is the commander-in-chief?
Many times the press, and since being like on that end, they get a bad rap for the role that they play. But the press is very simple. They spread information based on what's given. They put out newsworthy information, and they come to the aid of those who don't have a voice. And I think back to your time in the governor's office, when much of your efforts and some of the stuff that you were trying to get across and get done was not being highlighted. And until, like, you know, things went really sour and you were on the outside, and then you were able to reveal what things were like through your book and stuff like that. Wouldn't you see that as the same thing as what's happening now, the parallels with regards to some of the leak? Some people are trying to get the word out that things aren't the way they're going accordingly. Something's wrong. We need to sound the alarm and make the public know things aren't on the up and up right now.
What these individuals that are working in government need to do is to follow their chain of command. And every organization has a chain of command and protocols to follow when things aren't going right. So if an individual working in the White House or working in one of the intel communities, NSA, FBI, CIA, and they see something that's problematic, there is a chain of command to follow to rise that issue to whatever level. If you have exhausted all of that and your information has just been put aside and not taken as something serious to consider or investigate, then I can see going outside of avenues to share your concerns. But it seems as if these things are a knee-jerk reaction where people either want curry favor with the press or want to have their moment in the sunshine and to say, well, this is what they've done, and it's their words that's end up in a Washington Post or something or other. But this is the wrong way to go about doing it. If it's so egregious, there is a chain of command to follow. Have these people follow their chain of command to submit a complaint, to rise it up to all levels, the highest level. And then no one have taken your word and investigated to see how a remedy can come about to correct whatever the issue may be, then you can go ahead and do that. With regards to the press, and I saw it in my case, things were not validated or verified. It was just put out there because the press, most of them, the bigger press, they want to have demonic clicks, and they want the sensationalism, and they want the amount of people responding to their blogs. And it has gone away a lot from validating and verifying information before they print it. For example, when one of the reporters received information about my office and one of my persons in the office who claimed that she had a recording of Jeff, and what he said, the recording was not verifiable because it was so distorted and cut up and chopped up. But instead of verifying and validating that that's a factual recording, the reporter just put it out there. So these sort of things, it brings about the press not looking as credible. And then, too, when real information is disseminated that's really heightened to the concern where the public needs to inject themselves it may not be taken as credible or valid for the public to even be concerned. And I think in some instance, we're seeing some of that when people go out, some of the reporters go out to the streets and talk to people, and they go, what do you think about Donald Trump talking to the Russian president? They go, I don't care. So we've gotten to that point where people just shrug their shoulders, oh, this is how things are. But if something really comes out where it has a serious issue, the public may not listen anymore.
This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. A quick programming note, this is your place to hear from the candidates hitting the campaign trail through the summer months into next year's elections. Also, this program is supported by sponsors and listeners like you. Please visit rotundapodcast.com, click on the upper right-hand corner, and submit your generous donation of any amount. And as always, we thank you for your support. Later in the program, we'll hear more from former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, who shares her thoughts on the recently concluded legislative session and her estranged relationship with Governor Rick Scott.
No, the governor has never reached out to me, particularly, you would think, since he was the one to request for my resignation for no reason, knee-jerk reaction.
But joining us right now is Leslie Doogie, Director of Government Law and Policy in the Greenberg-Traurig Tallahassee office. She has more than 20 years of experience navigating all areas of the executive and legislative branches of government. Doogie has in-depth knowledge and has represented health, life, as well as property and casualty insurers for a number of years. She formerly was the Government Affairs Director of the Florida Chamber and served as Political Director for Associated Industries, where she remains a part of the lobby team for that association. On this episode, we will be tapping into her knowledge about the insurance industry and how it fared during the 2017 legislative session. Leslie, let's kick it off with a general overview about the insurance industry and this past legislative session. What passed? What failed? And was the industry successful in getting consumer issues heard?
That's a very loaded question. I would say we'll talk about first what passed. And there were a couple of good issues that moved along this session. One of them that was very important, it was attempted for the last few years, was legislation that set up insurance requirements for companies like Uber and Lyft. So they're called transportation network companies. And this was very important because these independent contract drivers have personal auto insurance coverage. But they were providing a service. And if there had been an accident or some injuries during the course of them providing that service, their personal auto coverage would not have taken care of that. So it was very important that we set up insurance requirements for these drivers. And so now the TNCs is what they're called, will be helping provide that coverage. And then insurers will provide that type of coverage to the TNCs. So that was a really good one. Another one that's going to increase access for flood coverage is a bill that passed that was going to encourage private insurers to come into the state and offer more coverage, allow surplus lines insurers to offer coverage until the market gets going. And that was a very good and very important bill because right now there's only a federal program that is providing that sort of coverage. And a third one is for our outgoing CFO, Jeff Atwater. One of his priorities actually sets aside funding for allowing state attorneys to hire prosecutors to prosecute insurance fraud. And I can't tell you enough that Florida is a big insurance fraud state, and we need a lot more of that going on.
So those were all that passed. What didn't make it through that was on the docket?
Well, probably more about what didn't pass is talked about more than what did pass. So things like assignment of benefits and addressing fraud associated with that. Workers' comp reform didn't pass, and also an issue that dealt with repealing our PIP statutes did not pass. The House and Senate really put a lot of energy into those issues, but it really just wasn't enough to garner approval to get it passed. Those are really difficult issues, and quite frankly, our two presiding officers had some priorities of their own that they wanted to pass. So I'm hopeful that in the next session you're going to see something more with those three issues pass. Now that Speaker Corcoran has his insurance priorities and some of his economic development transparency issues moved, and then Senate President Negron has the Everglades Reservoir Project behind him, maybe now we can focus on those insurance issues that take a lot more time to work through.
So out of the issues you mentioned, why are they important to Floridians and the insurance companies?
Okay. Well, I'll take one at a time. Assignment of benefits, or what we call AOB. Basically, it's a niche market has come from plumbers and contractors working together. They get a homeowner to sign over their benefits when they're dealing with a water claim, a leak, or something like that. So the homeowner doesn't know what they're signing, but they sign this document that basically assigns their benefits to that contractor. So the contractor comes in, tears out the person's walls, starts making all of these repairs, and they send inflated invoices to the insurers. So when the insurer denies or doesn't pay all of the invoice, then they get an attorney involved. Whenever there's attorney involved, it's going to be more money associated with it. So Florida law basically says if the court awards even $1 over what the insurer has offered to pay for fixing the house, then the insurer has to pay the plaintiff's attorney's fees. And that has become a very lucrative market for some attorneys. The practice has become commonplace. It's driving up premiums, but it's also making insurance companies not want to provide coverage in certain areas of the state where it's rampant. So you're getting less access and higher cost, and that's going to hurt people who are trying to buy homes. As you know, if you have a mortgage, then you have to have coverage. There are a lot of stakeholders in this fight, and there wasn't agreement by all of the stakeholders on what's causing the problem and what the solution is for it.
Isn't that always the issue?
Yes.
It's trying to get everyone to come together.
Yes. Another issue is workers' comp. The last time that was addressed was in 2003, and I have to put an aside here. I was with the Florida Chamber at that time, mm-hmm. and it was a hell of a fight to get that passed. It was a very ugly several-year fight. And that reform package brought down rates by over 60%. So obviously it was a good solution. Fast forward to 2016, the Supreme Court strikes down pieces of the law, specifically ones that dealt with the attorney's fees being tied to a statutory schedule, and then another provision that limited the amount of weeks an injured employee could have for getting getting back up to working. That actually resulted in the Office of Insurance Regulation approving a 14.5% insurance premium increase, which some people over the said. So we've had a 60% decrease over the last 13 years, and then all of a sudden with these rulings, we have a 14.5% increase. That affects every employer, every employee, and every business in the state of Florida. So that increase rate, which people are just now getting those premium renewal notices, and now they're waking up and seeing what's going to happen. So the cost of doing business, the cost of every product in the state of Florida is going up. And we have to address this. That is a very important issue.
So what happens next as we go into the next few months with some of these issues and the insurance industry overall? How do they adjust to all these changes?
Well, we cannot sit back and rest. There's not a lot of time. The 2018 session starts in January. And so our firm already is starting to get back with legislators. We let them have a little bit of rest, but we're getting back with them. We've got to educate the members. We've got to keep fighting for these reforms, especially the assignment of benefits and the workers' comp. It's extremely important to the state. And legislators, I think, know that inherently, that they've got to help consumers. But there are a large amount of freshmen that came in this year, and there were a lot of big issues that were sucking the air out of the room. So you couldn't take the time that was necessary to walk through all the issues and get everyone comfortable with what needed to be done. So we are spending this summer, the next 4 months, with legislators explaining one-on-one what needs to happen And hopefully, I'm ever optimistic that they will come back and we will get some help on that.
Well, I wish you all the best. And Leslie, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me here on the Rotunda.
Great. Thank you very much.
Former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll has been keeping busy since her resignation, consulting, advocating for Trump, and enjoying family life.
Well, life has been a little less stressful, put it that way. I've become a grandmother, our first grandchild, so we've been pretty busy with that and with helping out our son because he plays NFL football for the Philadelphia Eagles. So we had to travel to Philadelphia a lot to help out with our grandchild. And then just doing little odds and ends and helping good candidates, get elected to office.
What did you make of the legislative session and how things went down?
It was rather interesting to watch, and it makes you wonder. I wish people had interviewed Speaker Corrigan a little bit more to find out his rationale and reasoning behind taking such a hardline stance against what he coined corporate welfare with regards to Enterprise Florida, Visit Florida, and money is just being flown out to other places without, it seems, accountability and or looking at the rate of return and how much are we truly investing from the taxpayer dollars to these entities. And many people bashed him for taking such a hardline stance. But I think when you are looking at the public dollars in the hands of one or select group of people that could just be doled out without having a clawback and without seeing those real rate of returns coming in, he wanted to say, let's take a step back. Instead of giving you more money because you say you want it, let's make sure we have accountability of these dollars and not have it just in the hands of a few, to just have it as if it's your slush fund because it's really the taxpayer money. And recently there was an article that came out that showed where the governor has invested in, or he has investments in a couple different companies, which he has direct input to certain policies where his portfolio has benefited from, whether it's the mosquito company or the oil company and construction pipeline company. And those sort of things, I believe Speaker Corrigan wanted for us to just take a step back and say people in government should not be enriching themselves because they have a position to address either the policies that could bring about growth for companies that they have a tie with, and or the public dollars should not be used for advancing any enrichment of political figures because of the position that they hold.
Speaking of Governor Rick Scott and Speaker Richard Corcoran, they were going back and forth with regards to Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida. What do you make of Governor Scott's this session, his role? How did he do, and how is he doing for the state since you're no longer the lieutenant governor? How has things been from your outside looking in?
I believe from what they present, it appears that things are looking well for him. With regards to how this session went and the back and forth between the speaker and the governor, it appeared that the governor's office or the governor could have handled it a little better, as opposed to coming at it as at an adversarial way and taking out advertisements with his Let's Get to Work committee. You raise money from donors, and is it why are donors giving you money to attack a fellow colleague, to say that this person, those politicians in Tallahassee don't understand the need for economic growth in this state? I think that's a wrong statement. And it's also a wrong message to send to the public that here you have a Republican-led Senate, House, and executive level, and you're not able to get along. I think lots of that could have been worked out behind closed doors. Work your issues that you have agreement on, find some commonality to come to the middle of the road for those that you don't, and let it go for the things that you're never going to change the minds of them about.
It doesn't seem like that's the strength of the governor behind the scenes to be able to bring people to the table. You know more than us being in there. You're saying that's what should have happened to make things go smoother, but was it even possible?
I think the governor may be on a campaign mode, whether he plans on running for Senate or he plans on running for something else. So he may have been flexing his muscle, but the speaker had more muscle because he was clearly able to drive the agenda and to stay steadfast to his position. And with the governor going public, he did not help himself or his agenda to really extend the olive branch to make things work.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with former Florida Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll.
With your relationship, a strong supporter of President Trump, and Governor Rick Scott, he's a strong supporter of President Trump, calling him a really close friend. You've seen him make several trips to Washington over time. What about your relationship with Governor Scott? Has there been any mending since your departure? Has it just been pleasantries or anything at all since you have this link?
No, the governor has never reached out to me particularly, you would think, since he was the one to request for my resignation for no reason, knee-jerk reaction. And after all has been said and done, no one was charged with regards to issues with the exception of the attorney for Allied Veterans. And even that attorney, his charges were all dropped, and the state chose not to retry the case. They claimed that they had other more pressing things to do. And so therefore, there was a big hoop to do about nothing, whether most times in politics, when you have people being accused and alleged to bring about a smokescreen, there's something else happening behind the scene of other things that they don't want you to know about. And I think I was a smokescreen for other things that was happening that they didn't want the press or the general public to know about. But unfortunately for the governor, I believe that he missed out on having a good ally alongside with him, because I did nothing but give him 100% of my loyalty and support and worked very diligently and hard for the people of the state of Florida. As you can tell on my website, jennifercarroll.com, all of the accomplishments that I was able to achieve during that time. But you would think after all the dust had settled and you know, what the governor inferred that why I left office have not come to fruition. As a matter of fact, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, in doing their review, basically said in their final report that I had no wrongdoing. It would be nice for the governor to be the adult in a room to say, I apologize for putting you and your family through such turmoil for no reason, and I should not have. And I would accept his apology if he were to ever do that.
Looking towards the Trump administration, do you see yourself joining in any capacity if an opportunity came about?
If the opportunity came about, if it was the right opportunity, and look, working in the Trump administration, Scott administration at the highest level, and some of the political gamesmanship that was played there, and the tactics of the cutthroat political tactics of the folks that inside that either don't want, like I mentioned before, don't want you there because you're not an insider. You're not one of those people that they have chosen to be in that position. So they will do their little dirty deeds. Knowing what I know now, I'll be more prepared to handle myself in the cutthroat of the political environment. But it will all depend on what it is. But I believe the president has his hands so full with so many of these fires that's coming his way. At this juncture, President Bush had over 100 people of his cabinet and high-level appointees already put in place. President Obama had over 200, and it's just double digits of what Donald Trump has been able to put forward, because he's had to handle so many different issues all at once, like drinking out of a fire hose for him. And hopefully this trip to the Middle East and to Europe, to Rome, will give him a breath of fresh air to be revitalized when he comes back to address his domestic agenda.
All right. Well, former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me. I really appreciate your time.
Sure thing.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program. As always, we want to hear from you. Send in your comments or questions and story ideas. And be sure to join us again next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.